Oh, so this is our regular autumn session, occasionally known as an Easter session, but I think we're slowly changing the name. But it has a, as you know, it's also a transmission session for my Dharma brother Sexton Burke and myself. Now, and people are moved to ask often, what is transmitted? And it's a good question. So good that I'll leave you to find an answer for yourself. But this process of transmission has been going on for aeons. Dipankara Buddha, way back, one of the great, the seven ancient Buddhas, he gave face-to-face transmission to Shakyamuni, and then in our own era, Shakyamuni passed it on. And I want to look at these aspects of it as well, just these examples, a couple of examples, and just so you can get a flavour of what's happening. And you'll get it if you look in this book, some examples. This is basically, this is really the beginning of what would be called our historical lineage. And the case, once in ancient times, when the world honoured one was at Vulture Peak, he twirled a flower before his assembled disciples. All were silent, only Mahakasyapa broke into a smile. The world-honoured one said, I have the eye treasury of right Dharma, the subtle mind of Nirvana, the true form of no form, and the flawless gate of the teaching. It is not established upon words and phrases. It is a special transmission outside tradition. I now entrust this to Mahakasyapa. So there's an entrusting, passing on. But it happens in a face-to-face matter. You can't do it by email. You can't do it otherwise. It just has to be there. This person to person, passing on the light. I'm noting the day I'm wearing Savannah's transmission T-shirt. Light. Passing of the lamp. So that was the first in a series. Another notable one was the great Huineng, the sixth patriarch, who really got things moving in China. Now the 33rd patriarch, Dai Kan Zenji, was working, this is Enno or Huineng, was working hard in the rice refining hut of Obai. One night, Dai Man Zenji, who was the fifth patriarch, entered the hut and asked, has the rice become white? The master said, yes, it has, but it is not yet sifted. The patriarch struck the mortar three times with a stick. And the master sifted rice with a winnow three times and entered the patriarch's room. A more modern case, one might say, is the transmission of Taishan. And I'm not going to go into the background, but you can read all about it here. But Taishan visited Long Tan, questioned him sincerely far into the night. It grew late and Long Tan said, why don't you retire? Taishan made his bows and lifted the blinds to withdraw, but was met by darkness. Turning back, he said, it is dark outside. Long Tan lit a paper candle and handed it to Taishan. Taishan was about to take it when Long Tan blew it out. At this, Taishan had sudden realization and made bows. Long Tan said, what truth did you discern? Tungshan said, from now on I will not doubt the words of an old priest who is renowned everywhere under the sun. The next day, Long Tan took the high seat before his assembly and said, I see a brave fellow among you monks. His fangs are like a sword tree. His mouth is like a blood bowl. Give him a blow and he won't turn his head. Someday he will climb the highest peak and establish our way there. Taishan brought his notes on the Diamond Sutra before the Dharma Hall and held up a torch saying, even though you have exhausted the abstruse doctrines, it is like placing a hair in vast space. Even though you have learned all the secrets of the world, it is like letting a single drop of water fall into an enormous valley. And he burned up all his notes. Then making his bows, he took leave of his teacher. Now these short stories make it sound easy. This happened, they met, said something, wonderful, oh, enlightened. That seems pretty easy. I thought, hey, all I need to do is meet a teacher one day and at the end of the session I should be all clear. And I met Nakagawa Soren Roshi, and at the end of the session I was all a mess. All pain. Yeah. And it's been like that for a long time. So what they leave out, the stories we read here, they leave out is what went before. And to illustrate, I cite this case. And the case is my old friend Linchi. I have a special feeling for him. The story is very instructive to all of us. It says, when Linchi was a new monk in Huang Po's community, his behaviour was simple and direct. And being simple and direct, please sit comfortably if you're not already doing so. My apologies. The head monk recommended him, saying, though he is a new monk, yet he differs from all the others. And then the headmaster asked him, how long have you been here? Linchi replied, for 3 years. The head monk said, have you ever been for an interview yet? Linchi said, never, I do not know what to ask. The head monk said, why do you not go and ask the reverend head of the monastery what is the essence of Buddhism? Linchi accordingly did as he was bid. But even before he had finished speaking, Huang Po hit him. Linchi withdrew. When the head monk asked him how the interview had gone, he said, even before I had finished speaking, the Osho hit me. I do not understand. The head monk said, simply go and ask again. A kind elder brother. Linchi did so. Huang Po hit him again. Like this has happened for still a third time, the questioning and the hitting. Linchi went to the head monk and said, you had the kindness to send me to question the Osho. 3 times I asked and 3 times I was beaten. I'm afraid I am obscured by my karma, and I do not understand his deep intention. So for the time being, I'm resigning and leaving. The monk said, if you're going, you have to take leave of the Osho. Osho is the head of the monastery in this case, Obaku. Linchi bowed his acceptance and left. The head monk went at once to Huang Po and said, that young monk who came and questioned you is really suited for the Dharma. How about that? When he comes to take leave of you, find a way for him to continue. Planting for times to come, he will grow into a big tree that will give shade for all men. Linchi came to take leave. Huang Po said to him, you must not go anywhere else but to Tai Yu, who lives near the shores of Koan. That's not Koan, but it's a place name. He will explain to you. So Linchi went to Tai Yu, who asked him where he had come from. Linchi replied that he came from Huang Po. Tai Yu said, and what did Huang Po have to say? Linchi replied, I asked him 3 times what was the essence of Buddhism, and 3 times he beat me. I do not know whether I was at fault or not. Taiyu said, when Huang Po, with his grandmotherly kindness, has taken all this trouble over you, you still come here asking me whether you were at fault or not? During these words, Lin Qi had a great awakening in him and said, after all, there is nothing much to Huang Po's Buddha Dharma. Tai Yu grabbed him and said, you little bedwetting devil, you come here saying you do not know whether you're at fault or not, and now you say that after all, there is nothing much to Huang Po's Buddha Dharma. What have you seen? Speak quickly, speak quickly. Lin Qi, while Tai Yu was still grabbing him, gave him three punches into the ribs. Tai Yu released him and said, your master is Huang Po, that has nothing to do with me. So, Lin Qi left Tai Yu and returned to Huang Po, who, seeing him coming, remarked, when will there be an end to the comings and goings of this fellow? And Lin Qi said, it is only because of your grandmotherly kindness. Then, after the usual courtesies, he stood to attend on Huang Po. The latter asked him where he had come from. Lin Qi replied, the other day you were kind enough to send me to Tai Yu for an interview. Huang Po asked, what did Tai Yu have to say? Lin Qi then related what had happened. Huang Po said, how do I have this fellow coming here? Just wait, I'll beat you up. Lin Qi said, what do you mean about waiting? Get it right now. And accordingly he punched Huang Po, who said, this madman who has come to stroke the tiger's whiskers. Lin Qi gave a cut, and Huang Po said, attendant, bring this madman to the monk's quarters. So, that's the story. Now, let's have a look at it. There are two primary aspects to Zen practice. The first is insight into self-nature, and the second is the development of character, so that insight can be expressed in daily life. So, while they can be considered separately, they are in fact two sides of the same coin. So, a practice that emphasises one side to the neglect of the other can have limited results. Insight is a private matter. It's something internal, and we are, in a very deep sense, alone when it happens. Character, on the other hand, is what is revealed through our social relations and actions. There is, of course, also a private aspect of character, and that is shown in today's story. And the story of Lin Qi contains both of these features. So Lin Qi, we don't know his birth dates because he wasn't famous enough to be noted when he was born. We only know when he died, about 866 or 867. And Lin Qi is one of our great ancestors in the Dharma. He founded the school named after him at the time of the great persecution of Buddhism from 842 to 845. This school is one of the great source streams of our tradition here. And the other great stream, of course, is the Soto school. And Lin Qi was the Dharma great-grandson of Matsu, who Silvana mentioned, I think yesterday, and I mentioned him earlier in the week, one of the great Chan masters, who is said to have had 139 Dharma successors. Yeah? Quite a production line, you might think. Yeah? Had something going for him. And I regard Lin Qi as the person who brought to fruition the process of sinification of Zen, or Chan Buddhism. With Lin Qi's Zen, all the abstract metaphysical notions of Buddha nature and mind and all that stuff are done away with. What he does time and again is to direct his students and listeners to the individual person and to the reality of the present moment and what he calls the true person of no particular rank. So Lin Qi, being the hero of this story, is the first person we meet. He entered a Buddhist monastery as a boy and studied the Vinaya and the Sutras. So we know that by the time he was an adult, he would have been well versed in the sutras and treatises of the Mahayana, as well as the ethical principles and the rules of the Sangha. And this is something we should not forget. Despite the claims that Zen is a teaching beyond words and letters, and it is that, the old masters were themselves well versed in words and letters. They were literate, make no mistake. But they did not find peace through merely reading about Buddhism. They were hungry for something else, And this hunger is shown in Lin Chi's story. At the age of 20, he began to have an urgent need to grasp the deep meaning of the scriptures through his own experience. He set out on the 2,000-kilometer-long journey to the south of China in order to seek instruction from a master of the southern school of Chan. And he eventually arrived at the monastery of Huan Po and sat there for 3 years, even after enduring the hardships of his pilgrimage. He was just sitting, but sitting in a state of deep doubt, and that is where the story begins. Imagine this, 3 years, 3 years. And you think 7 days is a long time. And it says, when Lin Chi was a new monk in Huang Po's community, his behaviour was simple and direct. The head monk recommended him, saying, though he is a new monk, yet he differs from all the others. And the head monk at this time was Mu Chou. He also has an interesting history. Apart from the role he played in Lin Chi's life, he is also known as the master of Yunmen, who we met the other day when he took Tungshan to task and spared him 60 blows. After leaving Huang Po, Mu Chou is said to have effaced his traces. He wiped out his tracks and he did not let himself be recognized as a master. He's passed his days making straw sandals and secretly left them on the roadside for the poor and for traveling monks. So there he is. Some people belong in the mountains, others belong in monasteries. They're all turning the Dharma wheel. But in Mu Chou's case, sometimes people would find him. Monks would tell each other, hey, you know, up in that mountain there's this really wild guy. Must have a great up. Must meet him. He always kept his door, the door of his room shut. If a monk came for doksan, Mu Chou could discern from the monk's state of mind, or discern the monk's state of mind from the sounds of his steps. If he considered this state of mind promising, he called out, come in, and grabbed hold of the monk and shouted, say it, say it! If the monk hesitated for an instant, he shoved him out of the room and slammed the door behind him. And this happened to Yuan Men, except what happened was, as he slammed the door, Yuan Men got his leg caught. And his leg broke as it did so. And Yuan Men shouted, ouch, as one would. In that moment, though, he had an abrupt awakening. And as it turned out, that following this, Yuan Men became one of the greatest teachers in China, one of the greatest teachers in the history of our tradition. So, here we have the head monk. So, have you been for an interview yet? Lin Chi, never. I do not know what to ask. I guess we all know how that feels. We come to this practice due to a sense of unsatisfactoriness in our life. But this sense is often vague and hard to come to grips with. We can't say just what it is we're looking for. We don't know where to start. Lin Chi is like this. Despite his years of study and long journey, he can't go to Doksan. Happened here, you know, that sort of feeling. You sit here thinking, well, I want to go, boom, boom, oh, I don't know, boom. But he's there. So the head monk gives him a hint. Okay, why don't you go? Why do you not go and ask the reverend head of the monastery what is the essence of Buddhism? Not a bad place to start, one would think. So away Lin Chi goes for an interview with Huang Po. So Lin Chi accordingly did as he was bid. Now picture this. Here is the young Lin Chi in his early 20s, confronted by this great teacher whom he had crossed China to meet. And there is Huang Po. We met Huang Po in my first talk. And there he is, physically a giant, set about 2 metres tall with broad shoulders. And so he's both morally as a teacher and physically a formidable person for Lin Chi to confront. Some seriously large guy here. And so he asked this question, but before he finished speaking, Huang Po hit him. And he didn't say he tapped him, he said he hit him. And one would think he would have hit him as only Huang Po could have hit someone. Lin Chi withdrew. When the head monk asked how the interview had gone, he said, even before I had finished speaking, the Osho hit me. I do not understand. The head monk said, simply go back again. Lin Shi did so. Huang Po hit him again. Like this had happened for still the third time, the questioning and the hitting. Not an auspicious beginning to his relationship with his teacher, one would say. Under these circumstances, which of us, who of us, would not be tempted to criticise Huang Po as a vulgar, uncaring brute? What's with that old bastard? All I asked was a simple question. And what does he do? Instead of giving me an answer, he hits me. What sort of teacher is that? And so on. Pain and blame, pain and blame. But Lin Shi's response is very different. He doesn't criticise Huang Po. Instead, he places the source of his lack of progress where it belongs, with himself. And so his strength of character shines through his misery. And so Lin Shi went to the head monk and said, "You had the kindness to send me to question the Osho. Three times I asked and three times I was beaten. I'm afraid I'm instructed by my karma and do not understand his deep intention. So for the time being, I'm resigning and am leaving." So what anguish there must have been in his decision. A great personal hardship, not to say peril, he had walked halfway across China. Then having found a temple and a teacher, he'd sat patiently for 3 years, all to no avail. His karma was keeping him from understanding. Perhaps he's destined to wander all his life and never gain any insight. How many more rebirths would he have to endure before he was ripe? So with heavy heart, he prepared to set out without any particular direction. His dreams had come to nothing. But Mu Cho intervenes once again and urges Lin Shi to visit Huang Po and say his farewells. And Lin Shi bows and accepts the advice. So while he's packing up, the head monk goes to see Huang Po and he says, "That young monk who came and questioned you is really suited for the Dharma. When he comes to take leave of you, find a way for him to continue. Planting for a time to come, he will grow into a big tree that will give shade to all men." Very perceptive. Yeah. We sit in the shade of that tree, right here, right now. So Lin Shi came to take his leave, the formal leave-taking. Huang Po said to him, "You must not go anywhere else but to Tai Yu, who lives near the shoals of Koan. He will explain to you." So Huang Po makes no move to prevent Lin Shi from leaving, but he does instruct him on how to go only to Tai Yu. This is a great mystery. Yeah? It's just something that comes spontaneously from Huang Po. He doesn't have any intention here. So with heavy heart, Lin Shi sets out once again, but as he goes, he carries something with him. He's resonating from the three blows he received from Huang Po, and this resonance goes deep into his being. He's like a crystal sphere that's been set vibrating. The slightest touch, the barest increase in energy will shatter it, and that's what ensures. So Lin Shi went to Tai Yu, who asked him where he had come from. Lin Shi replied that he came from Huang Po. And what did Huang Po have to say? Lin Shi replied, "I asked him three times what was the essence of Buddhism and three times he beat me. I do not know whether I was at fault or not." So in meeting Tai Yu, he finds himself between the hammer and the anvil. He receives no sympathy, no consoling words about how harshly treated he has been by Huang Po. Quite the opposite. Tai Yu comes straight back at Lin Shi and scolds him. "When Huang Po, with his grandmotherly kindness, has taken all this trouble over you, you still come here asking me whether you're at fault or not?" Not much sympathy there. But during these words, Lin Shi had great awakening. Huh? What's going on? Suddenly everything is shattered. The old Lin Shi falls dead at Dai Yu's feet, and the new man springs forth out of the void. A roaring tiger, full of strength, without self-doubts. He knows, and he knows that he knows, and no one can fool him now. So he can declare, "After all, there is nothing much to Huang Po's Buddha Dharma." So how are we to understand this? Is this a put-down of Huang Po? Are all these words sour grapes? It's easy to walk away from this practice of ours when we feel we're not making progress. We can say it's a lot of nonsense, all kinds of rationalizations are available to justify our giving up. But this is not what Lin Chi is saying. And Tai Yu checks to see if Lin Chi has really seen anything or not, so he demands to know. "You bedwetting little devil, do you come here saying you do not, or you come here saying you do not know whether you were at fault or not, and now you say that after all there's nothing much to Huang Po's Buddha Dharma. What have you seen? Speak quickly, speak quickly." So it's always possible to fake it, you know, and fake it for a while, but our insights need to be checked, tested. So Lin Chi, while Tai Yu was still grabbing him, gave him three punches into the ribs. Whack, whack, whack. Tai Yu released him and said, "Your master is Huang Po. That stuff has nothing to do with me." Lin Chi is confirmed. His response is appropriate. So Lin Chi left Tai Yu and returned to Huang Po, who, seeing him come, remarked, "When will there be an end to the comings and goings of this fellow?" But the person who returns is not the troubled young man who went away. Far from it, and the difference shines forth in his behaviour and words. Lin Chi said, "It is only because of your grandmotherly kindness." Then, after the usual courtesies, he stood to attend on Huang Po. The latter asked where he had come from. Formal question. Lin Chi replied, "The other day you were kind enough to send me to Tai Yu for an interview." Huang Po, "What did Tai Yu have to say?" Lin Chi then related what had happened. Huang Po said, "How do I have this fellow coming here? Just wait, I'll beat you up." Lin Chi said, "What do you mean about waiting? Get it right now," and accordingly punched Huang Po, who said, "This madman who comes to stroke the tiger's whiskers." Lin Chi gave a cuts. Huang Po called, "Attendant, bring this madman to the monk's quarters." So Lin Chi has found his true home at last. He's amongst friends, and what does he do? He returns to his zazen. His true practice has begun. Now, there are three requirements necessary for the Zen student: great doubt, spirit of inquiry, great faith, and great resolve. The spirit of inquiry is essential. You have to doubt until you can doubt no more. There needs to be a deep urge to go deeper until the foundation of reality is experienced. This intense, desperate seeking is the driving force of Zen consciousness. For the early masters such as Lin Chi, Huang Po, Taishan, Zen was not a conceptual plaything but a vital fact which intimately concerned life itself. These early teachers had a desperate need to know the truth and were willing to give up their lives in the effort to find it. Indeed, given the times, they needed this intense doubt in order to overcome the trials of just meeting a teacher. Not a matter of getting on the internet and finding one and signing up and jumping on a plane and driving out and having everything laid before you. No. It would have been no easy task to travel on foot around China in those days. Even to set out would have taken much courage and inquiring spirit and much desperation. We have the symbolic example of the second patriarch, Hui Ko, who stood patiently in the snow for a week waiting for Bodhidharma to say something to him. Finally, in desperation, he cut off his left arm and presented it to Bodhidharma as an expression of his sincerity in seeking the truth. We don't have to do that here. Suppose a little bit kinder, or maybe not as kind, who knows. When Lin Chi asked Huang Po about the first principle of Buddhism, the question was not an idle one. It came from the depths of his being and was a full expression of his doubt. At first, Lin Chi didn't even know what to ask, yet the question of existence was with him all the time, for he felt dissatisfied with himself. It was an undefined and undefinable question. So when these seekers finally met with a teacher, they were often at the end of their tether. Consequently, it did not take much to open their eye. A shout, a sudden blow, a simple word. It's like beating a drum or striking a bell. The sound comes forth immediately. There's no hesitation, no pause to consider what should be done. So it is with Huang Po and Lin Chi. Strike them and the Buddha nature sounds loud and clear. And of course this method, Zen method, works because the student is ripe. Certainly in the early days of Zen's history in China, many of the people who came to practice were ripe for realization experience. Even today, the questioner has to be ripe if the question is to have an effect. Without this precondition in the student, nothing will happen. You can throw pebbles against bamboo for the rest of your days and you won't have kyogens and stuff. You can have someone strike you until the cows come home, but you won't laugh with rinzai. And innumerable people have had their legs broken without being followed by young men's awakening. And these old characters awoke to their Buddha nature, and so can each of us. And they realize that Buddha nature does not reveal itself in the world, but as the world. The Currawong's evening song is the voice of Buddha nature, and the gold of the wattle is its colour, and the sandstone cliffs are its form. And this great, great cosmos in which we find ourselves is Buddha nature singing itself as the green valley, the stars and the sky, such that birds and trees and we ourselves come forth in perfect harmony. And I know many of you have been listening to the song this week, wondering who's hearing. And it sings itself as you and me. Each of us is a phrase, some short, some long, in the great symphony of life. And we are the singers and the song. And as the cosmos and all that is in it is a song, it can only be experienced as the present moment. And like a song, it has no substance. It just is when it is. And when we first hear this music, we start to dance the great dance, the dance that never ends. Everything from the smallest particle to the largest galactic cluster is dancing this dance with us. And so our Dharma practice is a process of growing up, maturing as a human being, coming to awakening. And we do this by opening ourselves to life. And because practice is about growing up, it is something we must freely choose to do. And in the face of the transitoriness of life, we are responsible for using the passing opportunities to actualize our potential and to realize values. In other words, we are responsible for what to do, whom to love, and how to suffer. And we have to hold our life as we would hold a butterfly, unrestrained with an open hand. We must risk it flying away, risk losing it any moment. And that is how we need to hold the people whom we love, leaving them the freedom to depart at the moment of their choosing. So continue to ripen on your cushions. Allow the mysterious process of transformation to continue. Maintain the faith, even in your darkest nights. Please don't stop. And if you don't stop, perhaps one day you will meet Ku Shi. And Ku Shi called his attendant three times, and three times his attendant answered. Ku Shi said, "I was about to say that I was ungrateful to you, but the fact is, you are ungrateful to me." As Women says, Ku Shi called three times and his tongue fell out. His attendant answered three times and his responses were brilliant. Ku Shi was old and feeling lonely. He held the cow's head to make it eat grass. The attendant would have none of it. Delicious food does not attract a person who is full. Tell me, at what point was there ingratitude to the other? But the thing here, the final point, if we're going to take our practice, first we realise the great matter, but then we have to realise the great function. We have to take it up, take up the responsibility. And Women said, "You must wear an iron cane with no hole. This curse passes to descendants, no trivial matter. If you want to support the gate and sustain the house, you must climb a mountain of swords with bare feet."